colon for you on page 4B2. Take a look at 4B2 down the bottom, down on the left side, above the line, but two lines from the bottom. Having discussed the scriptural source for kiddushin through money, the Gemara now cites a baraita that considers the source of kiddushin through cohabitation. Uvi Allah. That's Deuteronomy 24:1. I don't want to go into this in detail because it wasn't in the past. Milamed sheniknet bevi'ah. This teaches that acquisition can be made through an act of intercourse, which is for the sake of the kiddushin itself. Okay. And then this is proved, or at least this is addressed, from the perspective of whether we could have derived this logically from other things that we know are done with intercourse, like the Yevama, for example. A person who is a Yavam and a Yevama, the way that that marriage, in effect, is made is through sexual relations. So that was the discussion here in 4B2. Having said all of that, five daf later, we're now returning to the same subject, because there it was an aside. It wasn't addressed as the principal subject. It was a part of a baraita. Now the Gemara has, in an orderly fashion, gone through kesef, shtar, and now it's coming to bia. So it will address it in a more detailed way at this point. Okay?
The translation is cohabitation. You're using a different word, so I take it that it doesn't have to be over a long period of time.
Cohabitation is an English euphemism for sexual intercourse.
But it could be a one-shot affair?
It can be a one-shot affair. Correct. There is no implication whatsoever that this is done more than once. And what we are probably talking about, although you'll see that this is, becomes a question, is you could ask reasonably, what is sexual intercourse?
Especially if you're Bill Clinton.
Okay.
Right.
This question does arise from time to time, and it did arise in the context that you are referring to. So it's not obvious, you know, that this, that we know what we're talking about, even when we know what the word means. Okay?
Is chapter 9 or client 9?
This is page 9.
Okay, page 9. Down,
this was called page 9.
Page 9.
Yes.
In the other Kesef and Shtar, we talked about intent for the Kiddushin.
Mm-hmm.
Intent here is as powerful as the Bia itself.
Being, does Bia imply intent, or do you have to have separate intent? Do you have to show that the...
Like you go to, you know...
Uh-huh. Well, that's a good question. In fact, you will require intent. Intent meaning that the intercourse is for the sake of marriage.
Right.
Because you can have intercourse for the sake of intercourse, and that's not the same thing. Right? So that when we are talking about intent, the nature of the intent that we're referring to is intent for the sake of creating the kinyan of marriage. Right? Okay? So that is true. You do need intent on that level. Now, so we want to see what the biblical source is of the fact that you can make a marriage with intercourse for the sake of marriage. Amar Rabbi Abahu, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Now the first point of view is the point of view of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay? And we will see that we have two different sources, two different biblical sources, articulated by two different rabbis. The first key figure here is going to be Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is an Israeli rabbi of the first generation of the Amoraim. Rabbi Yochanan says, "Diamar kra bu'ulat ba'al." He refers to Deuteronomy 22:22, where the woman is referred to, a married woman is referred to as a woman who has cohabited with a husband. Bu'ulat ba'al. Okay? Be'ula is used in two, the root, bet ayin lamed, is used in two different ways. As a noun, namely ba'al, husband. But the word ba'al comes from the verb, perhaps, of liv'ol, which is to have sex. Is to have sex. So bu'ulat ba'al means that she had sex with her husband. She had sex with her husband, and that is understood in the context to mean that that is what signifies the fact that they, in fact, made the marriage through that sex. Now, let's take a look at the source, Deuteronomy 22:22, because the context is of interest here. First of all, in the 22nd chapter of Deuteronomy, beginning with the 13th verse, we do discuss marriage as an issue of marriage, and that is ki yikach ish isha. Right, here is one of our instances where we have ki yikach ish isha. When a man takes a wife, literally, and yikach would mean the kinyan. What's the yikach mean? Which kinyan? Which type of what? Yikach, remember what were yikach? There are three ways to make a marriage. One is kesef, shtar, and bia. Ki yikach is kesef, is money. Okay? That's not fair, because kniya can be kinyan of anything, right? And we have three different forms of acquisition here. Kinyan meaning acquisition. But remember from the story of Abraham, we learn that ki yikach refers us back to the story of the purchase of the Machpelah, the Marata Machpelah, the cave of the Machpelah from Ephron the Hittite. And that referred then to Kesef. Ki yikach ish isha uva elaha usenea. A man takes a wife, uvaila, and he has intercourse with her, usnea, and he hates her. Okay, that's the setup now for this next piece. And the next piece is all about this man who decides after he's married her, and in fact we know the nature of the marriage at this point, that there has been intercourse, he decides to turn on her. And the fact that he had sex with her is crucial, because he is going to then defame her and say that she was not what he had bargained for. Namely, he thought he was marrying a virgin bride. He didn't get that. The goods are damaged goods. And there is ervat davar, okay? There's damaged goods here, at least as far as his assumptions had been beforehand. V'samla alilot devarim, he makes allegations against her. V'hotzia la shemra, and he defames her. So this is not nice. Right? It's not nice to do things like that. V'amar et isha zot lakachti v'ekravela, this woman I have married and I drew near to her, euphemism. Velo matzati la betulim. Right? I did not find that she was virgin. Now, the key thing here is that if she's not, the assumption is that someone else had defiled her in the meantime. Okay, that's going to be your basic assumption. Whether it has to be that, I'm not going to discuss. But that's the assumption here. Velakach avia nara v'ima v'hotziu. Now, the mother and the father, this man is defaming the woman. Right? He could not like her. He could divorce her. He could do all kinds of things. But he has rather decided to take a hate up against her and to defame her. That's not a nice thing to do. So her parents, in the meantime, are going to defend her. How do they defend her? V'lakach avia nara v'ima, the father and the mother of this nara. Now, she's a nara, remember. They take her, they hotziu et bituleya naral zikneir asha'ara. They take the sheet that was underneath them during that night, and they use it as evidence. There's blood on the sheet, in effect. And therefore, they are given the right to present that as evidence against the defamation of their daughter. Okay, he can't do that. V'amar avia nara lezikhenim. The father of the young woman says to the elders, "Et biti natati liisha zeh, I have given my daughter to this man. Liisha vayisne'eh, to become his wife, and he had a hate for her, cast a hate on her. Vinehu sam alilot devarim, he made allegations against her. Lemor lo matzati levitcha betulim, I found that your daughter was not a virgin. And this is the proof of her virginity." Okay? That's the proof of her virginity. They then stretch out the sheet. Before the elders. And the elders shall take this man and they shall punish him. Right? So this guy gets punished. Gets a fine and so on. So I'm not saying that this is going to be so great for this woman, but yeah. But this is not a great situation for her either. It's not good any way around. Now, then let's say that the guy was right. Okay, we're reading an allegation that's a false allegation. What if it's a true allegation? Right. Now, keep in mind that there are a number of possibilities here. It's not clear exactly what the text is referring to. You and I have read that marriage is in two stages. And remember, after the initial kinyan of the first stage, are they married or are they not married?
Married.
They're sort of married, but they don't live together. Okay? If she should have relations with another man, or he with another woman at that point. Well, that would mean, I take that back about the other woman, because he, of course, this is the polygamous society, so it's not the same for him as for her. Another married woman would put him in a difficult position. But the key person here is the married woman. He who has relations with a married woman and is not her husband, what happens to him?
Death.
Gets the death penalty. He gets the death penalty. All right? Mm-hmm. That is called adultery. Adultery results in a death penalty. Point number one. Point number two, it's not only that it's the death penalty. The truth is that in rabbinic law, in the law of the Torah, a death penalty is not a death penalty, is not a death penalty. There are death penalties and there are death penalties. For some things you get one death penalty, for other things you get another death penalty. Which is worse, I'll let you decide. But for the act of adultery, there is a death penalty, and that is chenek, choking. Mm. Choking. Doesn't sound good, does it? No. So that's the death penalty. There are really two penalties that are relevant in this discussion, we will see. The other one is skila. Skila is stoning. Okay? Now, choking means basically they take some sort of
it's like a hanging.
But it's not. Wait till I describe it to you. They take, remember, hanging is too little involvement in hanging. In Jewish law, the witnesses always have to initiate whatever is going to happen, because it's a very difficult thing. You're going to put a man to death. If you're not willing to do it, forget it. Okay? So it puts a tremendous burden on the witnesses. So the witnesses actually participate. You don't have a professional hangman who is doing this.
The witnesses.
Yes. Okay? So they are going to take a rope, wrap it around the guy's neck, one pulse from one side, one pulse from the other side. Not nice. All right? It's a very difficult way to go. That's called chenek, choking. The other death penalty, which is the one for adultery, the one for adultery is chenek. The other possibility is skila, stoning. Stoning does not mean what you think it means. It does not mean that you cast stones upon the person. Rather, in rabbinic law, what it means is that you bring the person up to a height, and you throw them off the cliff. Realm off the cliff. Okay, in rabbinic law, the forms of the death penalty are not exactly what you might think from the language, and that's an interesting subject in and of itself. There were, this has been studied in the last year in, it was the Journal of the American Academy of Religion, a woman at Yale has been studying this subject and writing about the comparisons between Roman law and Jewish law, particularly in these forms of the death penalty. Now,
are these done in the public? Is it a gathering like we knew the witch, when they put witches to death? It was a whole community gathering.
Well, it doesn't have to be, but it certainly can be. Okay? All right, so, אם אמת היה הדבר הזה, לא נמצאו בתולים לנערה. If it was, in fact, this, and she had married the guy. If she's sleeping around, we're not talking about that. Sleeping around may not be highly recommended by the Bible or by the Talmud, but that's not what we're talking about here. Here, the assumption has got to be that she has already gone through the kinyan of kiddushin. As it says here, ki kach ish isha. They've already made the kinyan of kiddushin, so she's married. She's at least an arusa. She's married in the first stage of the marriage ceremony. So this is for her then a case of adultery. She's committed adultery. Votziu et anar el petach beit aviha usekalua anshe ira. They take her out to the door of this of her house, her father's house, and the people of her city shall stone her. Again, rabbinic law, it doesn't follow the literal reading of this. Ba'avanim v'meta, they shall cast stones upon her and she shall die. Ki asta nevala b'Yisrael liznot beit aviha uviyarta ara mikirbecha. She has done an abomination in Israel to commit fornication in her father's house. Namely, she had been betrothed, gone back to the father's house, and you shall wipe out this evil from your midst. Okay? Verse 22. Ki yimatze ish shochev im isha b'ulat ba'al. If a man is found lying with a woman, so this is in a way a summary statement of the key legal concept here. A man is found with a woman who is bu'ulat ba'al. Right? She has had intercourse with a husband. Now, in the context, what Rabbi Yochanan is reading out of this is, that is how she was married. Right? She was married through the intercourse. That was the nature of the thing. Umetu gam shnehem aisha shochev im aisha. The two people who have this intercourse, namely, if she has intercourse with another man, they both die. They both die. Both the male and the female side of this adulterous affair die. Because the guy had intercourse with a married woman. She was the married woman. Both of them die. Adultery is punishable by death. Vaisha uviyarta ara miYisrael. That is a case of adultery. We've just seen the penalty for adultery is skila, is stoning. Okay? And this is now Rabbi Yochanan's source. Ki imatze ish shochev im isha bu'ulat ba'al. It's that phrase. A woman who has had intercourse with her husband. Right? There, the sense is, we have no indication in this particular phrase of ki yikach isha, that there are two separate things going on. That there's first an act of kinyan of something else. All we see here, the whole definition of marriage is bu'ulat ba'al. Bu'ulat ba'al. Rabbi Yochanan is learning from this that the way you become bula, married, is to have bi'a, is to have intercourse with the man. Okay? So that is the source now for Rabbi Yochanan.
Provided the man knew.
I didn't mean that he knew.
Oh,
He didn't know.
The man who has intercourse with her may not have known that she was a married woman.
But does it make any difference? It's his responsibility. He's got to know. He's got to talk to her. Right? If he has intercourse with a married woman, even if he didn't know, he's in deep trouble. That's why you got to ask a little. That's how you're supposed to do it. Okay? All right, now we go on. Now the Gemara asks, challenges Rabbi Yochanan. Right? Rabbi Yochanan, why do you derive this idea from this phrase, Bu'ulat Baal? I have another phrase for you. You don't need this one. This one, even as you heard me argue it just now, it was a little bit pushing. I was pushing the language a little bit. I tried to put it in the context to make it somewhat convincing. Remember the relationship between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. They were partners together. They discussed issues together. Rabbi Yochanan was the older one, the more or less the teacher, but they became equals. Right? Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. So Reish Lakish now disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan's analysis. Ku'ura zo shana Rabbi. Is it literally so ugly? What Rabbi Judah the Prince taught? In other words, Rabbi Yochanan. Don't you remember what Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi already taught us about this thing? He taught a different verse. What's so ugly about that? Of course, he uses ku'ura, ugly. You know, that's in a way the context here. It's a sexual language that's being used to discuss the issue. So, he says, ku'ura zo shana Rabbi. Now, Rabbi, get the timing here again. I said to you that these were first generation Amoraim. So that this comes right after the era of Rabbi Judah the Prince. Rabbi Judah the Prince is 200. You are dealing now with the next generation of Israeli Amoraim. They are both living in the land of Israel, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, living under the Romans. Both of them are living under the Romans. Reish Lakish, the Talmud tells, Reish Lakish was a gladiator. Rabbi Yochanan saved him from being a gladiator. It's one of the stories told about Reish Lakish. He then becomes an extraordinary scholar after he's so impressed with Rabbi Yochanan. Okay? So he says to Rabbi Yochanan, more or less his teacher, he says, was what our teacher, Rabbi Judah the Prince, thought such an ugly thing, Milamed Uvi Allah. He just taught the phrase Uvi Allah. We'll see where that comes from in a moment. Milamed Sheniknet Bevi'a. That phrase, just Uvi Allah, and he had intercourse with her, that teaches that she is acquired through intercourse. Now, let's take a look at that. Here, the source is Deuteronomy 24:1. Okay, let's go to 24:1. Let's see what we say here. Okay. Deuteronomy 24:1 is the section of the Torah that deals with the law of divorce. We've seen this before. And we've seen that frequently, the law of divorce, in this context, the language of marriage and divorce is intertwined. And in our last week, what we saw was because it was intertwined, in effect, to such a great degree, the law of divorce must be carried out through a written document. It was the juxtaposition then of language of marriage together with the written document of divorce that taught us that marriage itself can be performed through a written document. So we're back now to chapter 24 of Deuteronomy. It says, Ki yikach ish isha, phrase that we've seen several times in the Torah, if a man takes a wife, Uva Allah, and has intercourse with her. Okay? Now, according to Rabbi Judah the Prince, This all works together. What it means, ki kach ish isha uvala, means that when he takes her, how does he take her? Uviala? By virtue of an act of intercourse, that is the nature of the kinyan. That is the nature of the kinyan. Right? It is an acquisition that comes through that particular activity. So that's the way Rabbi Judah the Prince read it.
So then the conjunction of u means by instead of and?
It's a connection.
Well, either one. It can be either one, because and can mean, that is to say, this is a necessary connection between the two. There are actually a few ways we could read this, and you're going to see the Gemara is going to read it a few different ways. Is it not, the teaching of Rabbi Judah the Prince is certainly not the only way to read this. I would only say that it is not an impossible way to read it, but it's not the only way to read it. Which is why we have two different points of view. We have a point of view of Rabbi Yochanan and a point of view of Reish Lakish.
So the U is ambiguous.
The U is ambiguous. The U can mean and that and can mean a progressive and, this and then that. Or it can mean that the two things have to both happen. Or that the second half is an explanation of the first half. All of these things are possible with the simple vav.
Yes, but he uses the word yikach, which we said it deals with money first.
Maybe yes, maybe no.
And then it says and.
So yeah, but and can mean, maybe it means you could be right, but you could be wrong. I tried to argue that, which is why there's another point of view here. Rabbi Yochanan doesn't agree with this. It's not just that it's ugly. He just doesn't agree with it. The logic is not compelling to him. Okay?
Well, the footnote clarifies this. It says it can be read, when a man shall take a woman by giving her money and then cohabit with her.
Yeah, wait a minute. That's only one possibility. That's what's coming up next.
That's what I was saying.
That's what he was saying. That's what the Gemara is going to say too. But that's not what Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi says. Or that's not necessarily what he says. Okay? We're going to see. According now, Uviala, simply the use of the phrase Biala by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is being used to prove here that intercourse itself can be the form of the kinyan of the acquisition. Okay? That's all it says. It only says that. Mila med sheniknet bevia. This teaches that she can be acquired through that sexual intercourse. Okay? Now, Rabbi Abal, some say Rabbi Yochanan, answers the following. If we were going to deduce the law from there and cohabit with her, this is now an attack on Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, on Reish Lakish. Because Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi are the same people, as it were. Reish Lakish is giving us the tradition of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Okay? If Reish Lakish is going to cite that verse, Hava Amina Ad Mikadesh Vahadar Ba'il, what you just said, is that's the way you have to understand. If you're going to really look at that verse, you have to see the Vav, and the Vav means not one thing, but two things. What it means is, Hava Amina Ad Mikadesh. First, you have to have the kiddushin, which is money. No sooner do you do that, the hadar of ahil, that then you have the intercourse. And not only that, it's not that the intercourse can follow once you've had the money, but you have not really completed the kinyan until you do both. Because if this is a vav that really requires both sides of it, then we could say that in fact that verse doesn't tell us that you can have intercourse and make a kinyan through that. If anything, what that verse tells us, if that verse is going to be crucial, is that one thing is not good enough. You need two things. You need both kesef and you need biyah.
That doesn't square with the notion that kesef alone is sufficient.
That's correct. But it's
we just spent how many pages? Weeks.
Who's to say that that was right? Who's to say that was right?
Kesef alone is good for the Kiddushin.
What?
Kesef alone is good for the Kiddushin only.
Maybe. Not so fast. I mean, you know, there's a possibility. I mean, let's at least raise the possibility that maybe you need to, how do we say in English? You need to consummate the marriage in order for there to be a real marriage. That if the marriage is not consummated, maybe you could annul it, let's say, or you could somehow decide that it's not complete enough so that you could undo it in a different way than the normal processes of undoing it. In theory, we might learn that. Okay? But not, we shouldn't learn that because it's not true, but we could learn that if we wanted to just think about it. Okay. Hava minad mekadesh v'hadar ba'il. I might have said that a woman is not considered betrothed until the man betroths her through money and later cohabits with her. Right? That's what it means. Kamashmalan, therefore, we need the verse that we learned first, the verse of Rabbi Yochanan, which was to say, that verse is Be'ulat Ba'al. Be'ulat Ba'al. Okay? Because your verse is not a good verse, Reish Lakish. Your verse really teaches us possibly something else. So if you're simply trying to learn one thing here, you're trying to learn that it is possible to have a kinyan with Bia, that's not a good verse. So therefore we have to go back to the first verse, the verse of Rabbi Yochanan, which is Be'ulat Ba'al. Okay? The Gemara will go the other direction. Gemara has just defended Rabbi Yochanan, now it will attack Rabbi Yochanan. Okay? This is a great attack. Follow this. Matkif la Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel. Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel objects now to this reasoning, the reasoning of Rabbi Yochanan. Imke, if it were so, that cohabitation was required after money to complete Kiddushin. Now remember, according to Rabbi Yochanan, he needs the phrase Be'ulat Ba'al because the other one, Ki Kach Isha Uviyala, that shows that you need two things. Okay? So based on the choice of Be'ulat Ba'al, that presupposes that the other one requires two acts of kinyan. Money and intercourse. He says, if that's true, Im Kain, if that's true, that cohabitation was required after money to complete Kiddushin, Nara hamarasa diamar rachmana biskila heichi mishkachatla. How then would we ever find the case of a betrothed Na'ara such that the merciful one, namely the Torah, says that one is punished for adultery by stoning. Okay? Now, this goes back to what we did first. Deuteronomy 22.
Right after that first adultery thing.
First, right, the first adultery thing, you're right, you remember it? We read this was the case of the man who made the false allegations against the wife, okay? Then if it turned out that it was true, so on. Then the Gemara the Torah goes on, Ki yiye na'ara betola ma'orasa. In the case of a Na'ara betula ma'orasa le'ish. We have to take all of these words to heart. She's first of all a na'ara. And what a na'ara means?
Between 12 and 12 and a half.
Okay? So she's in her father's jurisdiction. Okay? Remember that. She's betula. Okay. So she is a virgin. She's a ma'orasa. She is betrothed. That is to say, she's been through kiddushin. Okay? Le'ish, to a man. Umetza'a ish ba'ir v'shachavima. And a man finds her in the city and lies down with her. That is to say, there are witnesses around. The assumption here, the evidential assumption will be that in the city, it would be known. If she were to cry out, it would be heard. All right? So it must mean that she was an accomplice to this affair. She has an affair. She's complicit in the affair. Thank you. All right? Now, if this is the case, you shall take the two of them out to the gate of that town and stone them to death. Stone them to death. Okay? They get stoned. The girl because she did not cry for help in the town, and the man because he violated another man's wife. Okay? Now, let's take this one apart. This is actually a second case. We had found in the previous discussion, remember, of the woman gets married, the guy makes allegations against her, and let's say it was true, okay, the allegations were true, she gets the death penalty. What death penalty does she get? Do you remember that? Chenek, choking. Alright, now we have a different case. This is a case of stoning. This is a case of stoning. So it's not the same case. This is a unique case. It's a unique case. Every death penalty that's different will provide a unique case as far as the law goes. So if we know that there are two different penalties, there has to be two completely different unique fact patterns that will define these two cases. So here we have to look at this case very carefully. All right? This is, remember, she is a Nara Betula. She is a virgin. Ma'orasala Ish. And she already is betrothed to her husband. And a man finds her in the city. Right? And she sleeps with him. Now, there's an inherent problem with this.
She's a betula, so it can't be.
If it requires for erusin that you have money and that you have sex, it is logically impossible for her to be orasala ish, right, engaged to a man, and to be a nara betula. She cannot be both at the same time. Right? That's the Gemara's argument, okay? Let's go back to the Gemara now. So this is logically impossible.
Didn't we say originally that there are two stages to the marriage? Even though she had the kid, she was betrothed, there could have been a year.
That's what you learned before. That's not what you're learning tonight.
But during that process, she's still a virgin, supposedly.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But we are arguing in this argument, keep in mind that what we know, as I mentioned to you early on, we have already seen some of this material earlier on in the chapter. And one of the things that happens in the Gemara is that you assume that you know something, but there's no reason why you should assume that, because what we are reading now perhaps predates everything. But we read in the Mishnah that there are three methods of Kiddushin. Well, maybe now we're reading the traditions that led at a later time to that kind of a codification. Maybe. All right? It's not clear. So that we can't, in a way, it would be nice to be able to unpeel this onion and to take it apart historically. People like Professor Weiser-Livni are doing exactly that. He will raise this and say, how could we have learned one thing and now we're learning another thing? Well, he would say, logically, therefore, we must have two different strands of the text which were somehow edited together at a certain time. Okay? It's a compelling way to analyze the text. And that's what Weiser-Livni does in his Talmudic analysis. But let's not do that. Let's simply take the facts about what we're reading at this point in the game. We do indeed know other things. they may or may not be compelling in this context, because this context may in fact bring us into a deeper level of something that preceded what we already know, even though it postdates it in terms of the editing of the text. Okay? All right, so here we are in the argument. This is the argument now, that's the argument for Rabbi Yochanan. No, I'm sorry, against Rabbi Yochanan. Narama Rasadi Amar Rachmana. When the Torah tells us this little piece that we just learned now about the Na'arama Orasa, the engaged, as it were, the betrothed Na'ara, that she is given the penalty of skila, of stoning, Heichi Mishkachat La. How is it possible? How is it possible? If in fact it requires two things, right? If the Nara's husband betrothed her with money and later cohabited with her, bu'ulahi, she already has had intercourse. She's no longer she's a Na'ara Maresa, but she is already deflowered. She's not a betula anymore. If in fact there has been one level of kinyan, namely the purchase, the money has been paid, right? And no intercourse has taken place, lav klumu, then nothing has happened. Then in fact she's not married at all. If it requires two things for her to be married, and only one of them has happened, then nothing has happened.
So there'd be no justification.
There'd be no justification for a death penalty. Exactly. The death penalty presupposes that she's married. So that if you start with this proposition of Reish Lakish, which is the proposition of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, then the Torah makes no sense.
Can't say that.
Can't say that. That would be terrible. Okay, love club. Okay, now the Gemara defends Rabbi Yochanan. So here, we're attacking Rabbi Yochanan first. Now we're going to defend Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, go back and forth, back and forth. Proposing that Scripture's case of a betrothed Na'ara could still be found. Oh, there is a case where a woman can be betrothed, and she could be a Na'ara, and she can have intercourse, and she could still be a virgin.
Known as Mary.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Aren't you glad you came tonight? This is sort of you wonder, where could you find stuff like this? Amaruha Rabbanan Kameh De'Abaya. The rabbis said the following before Abaya. Mishkachat la kagon sheba'a leha aruz shelo kedarka. Oh. This whole thing is possible if the man in fact had intercourse with her to make the marriage, but he didn't have normal intercourse with her. He had, instead of vaginal intercourse, he had anal intercourse with her. Who would believe this?
What is going on?
What's going on? You got music to this?
You.
Huh? Well, this deserves music, no? Okay. This woke up even the phones that were asleep. Okay. Now the phrase "bia shaloka darka" is not an obvious phrase. It refers, in this context, and I think that the interpretation is probably quite correct. Bia shaloka darka means anal intercourse. Anal intercourse. And if you look at note 23. Note 23 is important in terms of the language here. this Bia Shaloka Darka, literally intercourse not in its way. Right? So it's Shaloka Darka, not in its way. It's a euphemism for, first of all, non-vaginal intercourse, but as you said immediately when we began this class, and you began to just imagine what these other possibilities were, you know that's not the only possibility. Your Monica reference early on was, frankly, in theory, another possibility. It's definitely another possibility. Here, look at the way this is interpreted in Leviticus 18:22. Leviticus 18:22 is one of the sources that prohibits homosexual relations between male homosexuals, male homosexual relationships. And there, in that context, the language used is mishkave isha. A man shall not have mishkave isha. Now, literally, that means the lying downs of a woman. It's a euphemism for the intercourse of a woman. Okay, so men should not have the intercourse of a woman. But it doesn't say the intercourse of a woman. It says the intercourses. It's mishkave. It's in the plural. Therefore, what it is referring to is a male intercourse, which is, in all likelihood, anal intercourse. Okay? And the female possibility that there, in fact, is more than one type of intercourse. Because in that context it's referring to males, the assumption here of the commentators is that you're dealing with anal intercourse. Okay? So that is the way they interpret this. So, in other words, the Talmud is saying that, in fact, when he had intercourse with her, and it is possible then by implication that having intercourse for the sake of marriage maybe is more than one type of intercourse is permissible and will in fact allow that marriage. If that is true, then in theory he could have had anal intercourse with her. And then the next guy comes along. She's still a betula. She still is a virgin. And he then has vaginal intercourse with her. You didn't think it was possible. And it is. Okay.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes.
If the first guy had an intercourse with her, then it didn't bala. So it has no meaning to that.
What do you mean bala?
Bala means that you have an intercourse.
Who said
that? The kruma betulim nikra.
Yeah.
That's the definition of bala.
Who defined that? Who defined that?
I think this is the bala. This is what it means.
That's what you think. But that's not the only possibility.
That's Kruma's interpretation.
Exactly. Exactly. You might think that it's just one kind of a thing. So why then does it say Mishkave Isha? Why do you have another place in the Torah where it actually uses the plural in referring to intercourse with a woman, unless there may be more than one type of intercourse that's called intercourse?
So how come if there's two ways to have intercourse, there's only one way to not be a bala?
Why if there are two ways...
A betula. Why, if there's two kinds of intercourse, there's only one way to not be a virgin?
As far as I know, I'm not an expert in this matter, I think, because in the understanding of virginity, there is a barrier, okay? That barrier is broken, and that set of signs then becomes a key set of signs associated with a virginity. Okay, so virginity in that context presupposes the vaginal penetration. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's...
So then why is the other one called cohabitation if it's not coming...
All I can tell you is that the Torah uses... the Torah does use a plural term at one point.
Right. Okay? In English, though, I mean, a woman would still be a virgin if she had had any more intercourse but not vaginal. So it's no different.
Right, but I'm wondering why even then, why do you even call that?
I mean, she should have been no longer a betula.
No, I'm saying it shouldn't be called intercourse.
Anal should not be called.
That it would have. That was the assumption in the previous paragraph in the Talmud.
Oh.
You're right. That's what the Talmud assumed, that there's only one kind of intercourse. That's called intercourse, and that's in the front. Not in that. It doesn't involve from any other alternative. Okay, you're right. But this is another point of view.
All right. Wait till we get to the next part.
Okay, we're going back and forth here. We're going back and forth. Okay.
Rabbi, is from what's the significance of the different forms of the death penalty in this case? Is one considered worse than the other? I mean, how would they? Why is it different depending on this particular?
That's really another question. It's not clear, and they don't address that at all. Generally speaking, there. In the Talmud, in the Sanhedrin, they do discuss the hierarchy of penalties. Skilas, Refa, Herig, Vechenik. That's
the. Let me rephrase my question. What I'm saying is she considered as having is the transgression worse? To my way of thinking, I'm trying to imagine between Skila and Chenik, which would be worse? And it just seemed to me that. Of the two, not that I want to experience either, the Chenek would have been the worst, but it seems to me...
No, the Chenek is the less, painful of the... Chenek is considered less painful. Don't ask me why.
I did a survey of victims.
But I must say also, in the Gemara there, there isn't just one point of view. but it is considered less painful.
Different forms of how witnesses would have to participate with death penalties. Was there an accretion of different forms of death penalties? Or do we just see them all full-blown in the Talmud?
I don't understand the question.
Was there a period of writings where we only see two forms of death penalty?
No. In the Talmud itself, the Talmud Masechet Sanhedrin gives you all of these four. These four methods are described in great detail.
Okay. But somewhere, obviously, there had to be some evolution. But we're not capturing.
Yeah, we don't know what the evolution is. That's why, that's why one is studying this.
It could have been a cutting back. Jay's right. It could have been a cutting back to four.
Maybe, but. Keep in mind that we are starting with the language of the Torah, which is considerably earlier than that, and the Torah, in fact, does have these four types of language in it. Okay? Okay. Now, Amar Laho Abaye. Now, Abaye is going to reject the argument. Abaye says, even if the betrothed cohabited with her unnaturally, she would still be considered a non-virgin. All right? So that's Abaye's on your side. Right? He is defending this idea. Ab kan lo polige rabbi verabbanan ela biacher. Rebbe and the sages argue only as far as another person, someone who is not her husband, is concerned. That is to say, in the case where you have this other guy coming, this other guy coming from the outside, and it's a case of rape, or it's a case of her being a married woman sleeping in a case of adultery, then yes, in that case, there is only one thing called intercourse, and that is called vaginal intercourse. Okay? In that case, there is only one thing that we're calling intercourse, maybe, in terms of what we were discussing at that point in the story. But as far as the husband goes, as far as the kinyan goes, when we are talking about what it takes to perform a marriage, that's not the same set of facts. It's not the same issue. You know, every intercourse is not the same. The use of this or that type of intercourse for this or that type of penalty of the law or for the sake of kinyan, the acquisition of marriage, doesn't necessarily have to always be the same thing. There can be really two different possibilities here. One possibility is how you make a marriage. And for that, perhaps there's a wider latitude. Okay? Ad kan lo paligi rabbi v'rabbanan ele bi'acher. When there is this difference of opinion between Rebbe and the sages, it involves the other person. Aval ba'al, where we're talking about the husband, what it takes to create the marriage. Divrei akol im ba'al shelo kedarcha asa abatu be'ula. In fact, everybody agrees that even if he has anal intercourse with her, it makes her a be'ula. It makes her a be'ula as far as marriage is concerned. In other words, she is married. That is enough of a kinyan so that it's a significant kinyan. Okay? Now it goes back to the a little bit to what Abayah was referring to. Maihi. What is this dispute that Abayah was referring to? Detanya. There's a baraita. And look at this baraita. Ba'u alea asara nashim. 10 men cohabited with this Nara Ma'orasa. Right? She's the Nara who is already betrothed. Right? And she then has relations with 10 men. Excuse me, this is a theoretical question here. I can't imagine this is a real question, it's a theoretical question. Ba'u alea asara nashim va'adayin hi betula. The Baraita says 10 men cohabited with her and she was still left a virgin. Right? How could that be?
They should be stoned for not knowing what they're doing.
Because the Nara Ma'arasa now is the case of the adultery, right? When we're talking about acher, another man, okay? Here, it's possible, this is called, it's not called intercourse. Because it shall be a shaloka darka. It is intercourse, but not the normal way. So therefore, the Baraita says, even if 10 guys have intercourse with her that way, she hasn't been violated from the perspective of the laws of adultery. From this perspective of the laws of adultery. Rabbi Omer, but Rabbi Judah the prince doesn't agree with that, and he says, Omer, ani arishon biskila. He says the first guy gets skila, first guy gets stoned, the chulan bechenek, and all the rest of them, they get it bechenek. Right? So, in other words, the first one is the case of a na'ara ma'orasa. And it doesn't matter whether it's from the front or the back, it makes no difference at all. As far as Rebbe is concerned, it's intercourse. Okay? The first guy, he is the one who in fact is now the flowering her, as it were, so he gets the skila. The rest of them get chenek. Okay?
What happened if they're not Jewish?
He said
balance 9. I don't know. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, even if money and cohabitation were to require one another to affect kiddushin, right, you needed both of them, even if you were to need both of them, mishkachat la kagon shekidsha bishtar, it's still possible. When we said that the two of them go together, money, you know, we made this one possibility that money and intercourse are a necessary combo, because it says ki yikach isha uveala. So we said there was a necessary combo. The truth is that's only two out of the three. Only two out of the three. So maybe there's a third, another possibility here, that ki tsha b'shtar, he makes the kinyan first of all with the shtar, with a document. With a document, in which case there's no need to have the intercourse. Right? The intercourse is then freed from that. So they're not both necessarily together. Ho'il v'gomer u'motzi. since the document has the capacity, Mishkachat la kagon shekitcha bishtar, this method of kiddushin would not need cohabitation to complete it. Ho'il v'gomer u'motzi, since a document has the capacity to completely take a woman out of marriage, gomer u'machnis, it has the capacity to bring a woman into marriage just by itself. Okay? It has the possibility. Rabbi Yochanan thus finds it necessary to adduce the verse bu'ulad ba'al. He has to add this verse bu'ulad ba'al, which was the first thing that we saw, in order to show that cohabitation alone can affect kiddushin. The bottom line here is that there are really two possibilities, two scriptural possibilities. One is the possibility raised by Rabbi Yochanan, the other is the possibility raised by Reish Lakish. They do not agree with each other. But in fact, according to both of them, there's a scriptural basis for the notion of kiddushin bevia, of creating the betrothal by virtue of intercourse alone. That's going to be our key, by intercourse alone. Okay? That's going to be the key bottom line here. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan says, Bu'ulat Baal. I have a scriptural source to say to you that you can become a married with simply intercourse. Oh, Rabbi Judah the Prince or Reish Lakish, they say, no, I have another source. We then go back and forth between these two sources, because one says, Rabbi Yochanan's source says, no, the other source is limiting. It doesn't really say that. It says you have to have two kinds. Finally, we've come down to, no, there's a different way to do it. We can do it with a shtar, and then this one other kind. The two are not connected with each other. The bottom line of all of this is that we've seen different points of view, but no matter which point of view we will accept, we have seen that all of them point to a scriptural source to find the basis of this third method of kinyan for marriage. Yes?
Does the intercourse do away with the kiddushin ever seen differentiation?
That's an interesting question. It's not clear. It's really not clear. And the rabbis don't really want to deal with that, because they essentially don't like this idea of kiddushin bevia to begin with. They really don't want that to be the structure of things, which is why they create a context for it which makes it very unlikely that it will happen. In my own opinion, the reason why it's here is essentially to deal with the problem of what we call in English the common law marriage, because in the case of a common law marriage, that is where two people are living together as husband and wife. We assume having sexual relations with each other, and assuming that they are having those relations as husband and wife, the question is, need the law accept such an arrangement as in fact a binding arrangement according to the law for all other issues? Let's say monetary issues.
7 years.
Or let us say the issues of inheritance. Somebody dies. Does the woman inherit, does the child produced by that inherit or not? Are there any obligations to the wife? Does he have an obligation to support her? And all these really are crucial issues. So I think the law has got to deal with the category of the common law marriage, even though it doesn't want to, and even though it doesn't do it explicitly, it still has to acknowledge that this is in fact a way that things do work. And you see that it is rooted, though there are several different ways to root it. We see two major rabbinic streams that do root it in the scriptural source.
And forces adultery to become part of the... I mean, if these two people, in theory, are maintaining they're not married, then...
That's correct.
...adultery when they're messing around.
That's correct. Then also all the issues of adultery then come into play vis-a-vis those people as well. Correct.
The argument... Isha uva'ullah that...
Uva'ala.
That both kesef and bia are necessary complementary, is a single, essentially a single entity to affect Kiddushin, contradicts the original Mishnah that we began with, which says that they were Shalosh Drachim, distinct, Kesef, Shtar, and Bia were three separate methods of acquiring a wife. So
the way I'm trying to explain that is that we shouldn't assume that this is in chronological order, this argument. What we are reading now probably predates the issues that are being discussed here, even though they're being discussed at a later time by later rabbis, although not very much later. Remember, the editor of the Mishnah is Rabbi Judah the Prince. We see here that he is one party to one argument, to one side of the argument. Probably this argument predated him. Okay? So that what we read in the Mishnah is the result of the distillation of that, and it's the view of Rabbi Judah the Prince. But in fact, it was not the only point of view.
So it's not a discussion of the Mishnah here, it's kind of background.
It's exactly, background. Exactly. Okay?
I don't want to nitpick, but I have great difficulty understanding how even at that age, the assumption by everybody was made that a girl at the age of 20 or 20 and a half is ready for the physical aspects of marriage. 12 and a half is ready for the aspects of physical marriage.
It's
too young.
You think so? There are many, many cultures where young women are married, where they have sexual relations, beginning with puberty, physical maturity. I mean, I don't think that there's any medical evidence that it's not possible.
But there's medical evidence that not all womanhood has puberty at the age of 12, that early.
We're not saying that every woman has to get married at 12. That's not the assumption here. It is simply saying that if a woman does get married at 12, that it's a kosher marriage. That's all we're saying.
Why is the discussion focused on a nara?
Because that's the language of the Torah. That's simply the language. That's certainly not the only possibility. In that case, there are two ways in which women are dealt with in the Torah. One is the one who is still under her father's jurisdiction. The other one who is beyond her father's jurisdiction. So in order to conceptualize it, there are really two different possible environments for marriage to take place. One where she's an independent party. The other where she's not an independent party. Therefore, both of these are discussed in the Torah.
And is the Na'ar treated that way?
It's a different... The woman is in a totally different position.
Are laws of adultery different applied to a Na'ara and to a adult? Mm-hmm.
Depends on how young the woman. Well, Nara, no. The laws would be the same for Nara, because the Nara is 12 to 12 and a half, would be the same.
What term refers to the person, the woman who is over 12 and a half or something?
Bogeret.
And that term appears in the Torah?
Yeah. Not in the Torah, no. It does not appear in the Torah, but the fact that the Torah discusses these two different situations leads to an assumption in the Talmud that there are two different fact patterns and there are two different ages. One is from 12 and a half on, that's the Bogeret. And she is a totally independent entity. Okay?
Yes. Ulat Baal, I found it a very strong combination of two words because it shows intent. Because she can be Ulat, somebody else, which is a one-time story and there is no intent, and it's whatever it is.
That's
and
correct.
I think that this combination gives a very powerful argument that's consummated marriage.
So that's the Rabbi Yochanan's position. That's correct. That was what Rabbi Yochanan was arguing. Okay?
Just have one brief comment about common law marriage. Is that you not only have to have cohabitation, but you do have to have some kind of a public acknowledgement of acting as if you're husband and wife. Mm-hmm. You're signing in at a hotel as Mr. and Mrs. or going to church as Mr. and Mrs. or anything like that.
Yeah.
Even if you haven't had the formalities. Of course, New York State is one of the states that does not recognize it.
It doesn't recognize it?
So that if you were common law marriage in South Carolina, it's not clear that New York would let
the wife, the common law wife, inherit.
Fascinating. Very interesting.
Yeah, in other words, the parents of the husband mm-hmm. could come in and say, you're nothing. We get everything.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting.
New York State doesn't get common law.
The parents would live in New York, but the couple would have lived in Carolina?
Or let's say they lived in North Carolina or South Carolina long enough, and then one of them dies in New York, or they move to New York.
Oh, okay, but one of the couple has to have a nexus to New York, not just the family.
I don't think.
Well, that's interesting. I'm not sure whether New York would then say if their domiciliaries or residents of the Carolinas, and in Carolina, that's a, what do they call that? That's a conflict of laws, choice of law issue.
Right.
I'm not fully familiar with
okay.
it.
That's why all the lawyers tell you to make a will.
Okay. Let us continue. Rabbi Yochanan Hayuvala. Rabbi Yochanan took the point of view Uvulad Baal. That's where he learned it, right? That's where he learned that that the third method is intercourse. So what does he do with the phrase that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi used? Rabbi Yehuda Nasi used the phrase Ki Kach Ish Isha Uviala. So what does he learn from that phrase? He needs that phrase for another purpose. That is, Zonik Neit Bevia, this woman can be acquired as a wife through cohabitation. The Eina Ma'ivriya Nik Neit Bevia, but a Hebrew maidservant cannot be acquired through cohabitation. Right? And it's interesting. There was the issue which we saw early on in the course about the Hebrew maidservant. Right? There is a way that she is acquired. Now, one might argue that she can also be acquired through the same means. After all, it's a man, it's a woman, and maybe the servant, in fact, is a servant on that level as well, and it's not a case of rape or anything like that. No. He learns that, in fact, the maidservant cannot be acquired. Ki kach ish isha uvala. It is only when a man takes a woman as a wife, uviala, that in fact he can have intercourse with her. Okay? But not when he takes the woman as the servant. That's an interesting idea, and that's where he learned. Salkadatachamina, lest you raise in your mind the possibility, that you would learn by a kalvachomer, from a minor to a major type of argument, from the case of the Yevama. Remember the Yevama? That's the woman whose husband died, left no son, left no children, and has a brother. Right? The brother then has to marry that woman. So let's take that case. In the case of a Yevama who cannot be acquired with the payment of any money, she is acquired through an act of intercourse, a woman is acquired by money, namely the servant, the maidservant. Isn't it obvious that you should be able to be acquired through intercourse? Lest you have that line of reasoning and you think that that is logical, the Torah comes in and tells you that it's not. Okay? Then the Gemara says, how can you create this kind of a kal vachomer? Look at some logic behind this kal vachomer. Mal Yivama, look at the case of Yivama. Shekein zekuka v'omedet. She is already tied to this man that she's going to have intercourse to. She can't have any relations with anybody else. He has to have relations to her, with her, unless there's something that happens, unless they have a chalitza that will break that bond. But that bond, the minute the husband dies, that bond is formed. So that's completely unique. You cannot create a kal vachomer between that situation and the case of an ama ivriya, of the Hebrew maidservant. What does one thing have to do with the other? There already is a pre-existing tie between the Yavam and the Yavama. There's absolutely no pre-existing tie between the Ish and the Eved, the Amah Ivriya. Okay, there's nothing there. Mali Yavama Shekein Zekukah V'Omedet. You can't compare the two cases. Sal Kadat Chamin. So the Gemara concedes. That's a good argument, but it's not finished. Sal Kadat Chamin. You might have thought, Huil v'chatav im acheret yikachla, since scripture writes, if he shall take another wife, that's in the case of the Hebrew maidservant, the son decides to get married to the maidservant, right? And then it's, he can do that, it's possible, he can take her as a wife, then you have to go through the regular kiddushin, and if he takes another wife, he could have more than one wife too. Right, it's a polygamous society. So, O'il v'katav imacheret yikachla, if he takes another wife, hikisha hakatuv liacheret, scripture compares the Jewish maidservant to the other wife. The two of them are discussed in the same context. Uh-huh, now we got a possible comparison. Because they're discussed in the same context. And maybe, therefore, when you take the wife, it's like taking the maidservant. Right? Maybe there is a connection between the two. Kamash malan. Therefore, the Torah has to tell us ki kach ish isha uviala. When a man takes a wife uviala and has intercourse with her, not just a maidservant. You cannot learn with a maidservant. Torah has to have an all verse to guard against that possibility, lest you go in that direction. Okay. All right. We're going to finish this section. Right now, where are we? The Rebbe, who had used the phrase and cohabit with her as the source of kiddushin through cohabitation, right? Rebbe uses uviala. That's how he learned kiddushin through cohabitation. Hai svara minhale. Where does he derive this principle that the maidservant may not be purchased with intercourse? Right, we just showed that his words taught us that. Remember, there's a parsimony of verses. A verse in nearly every case cannot come to teach two things, unless there are some special things about the verse, an extra word, an extra letter, an extra something. If there is something extra, it can teach two things instead of one thing. But generally speaking, it can't come to teach one law and another law at the same time. Im kein lichtov rachmano uva'al. The Torah could have just said, if it was going to teach all that Rabbi Yehuda and Nasi wanted to teach, it could have just said uva'al. He has intercourse. When it says uva'ala, he shall have intercourse with her. Alright? That's the emphasis. Extra added emphasis, that counts out the Amah Ivriya, the Hebrew maidservant. Okay, Shma minatarte, and therefore you can learn two things even from that one phrase. Okay, because it could have said it differently, it said it in this way in order to be able to give us the possibility of two things. All right. Now go in the other direction. Rava deduces the two laws that Rebbe derives from Uva'ala. Right, there are the two laws from Ve'ala that we just saw. Ula Rava diama bar ahanya azbarali. And according to Rava, who says, Barahina explained this to me, ki kach ish isha uviala. It's an interpretation of when a man takes a wife and has and cohabits with her. Kidushina misurim levi'a havu kidushin. I think we'll do this one next time, because it requires a little bit more explanation. Yeah, okay? Okay, so it's raising another issue. So I think we're good. We're good to this point. All right, did we wake you up? All right, we took your mind off the day's work?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeshar koach. To be continued.
Thank you.
I don't know about that.